Today's the 17th of January 2015. I'm interviewing Keith Paramore about the life and times of the Paramore family of Hastings, and Keith will now start off just giving us some background to his family.
Well, my grandfather used to work at the meatworks there many years ago. My father used to work there. I had two uncles that worked there. I had a brother, or two brothers, sorry. My father was a foreman in the cattle yards. My uncle worked in the cattle yards with my father. My brother, David, was in the stock receiving sheep yards, and Kevin was down below in the pelts department later on. I started around about 1965. My father and grandfather and uncle were all jockeys, and during the off season they used to come to the meatworks and help process the carcasses, the lambs. When I left school, I was a little grocery boy, stayed there for a couple of years for good old self-help. Then I went and worked for Midway Dairies for about 6 months, 8 months, then toured the South Island for a period of time, came back and started at the works.
So what was it like, Keith, when you started at the works? It must have been quite an eye-open to a 16 or 17-year-old to all of a sudden start there.
Yeah, it certainly was. I never handled a knife in my life, and it was quite an experience. When I was in the little dairy there, the Midway Dairy, right at the end of Timona Road, this Maori boy, used to come in by the name of Tory Reed. He always used to tell me to go and work at the meatworks. I says, no way, I'm not going to work in that horrible place. I wasn't interested in that sort of thing, to outgo and rather do other things. But in the long story, I ended up going there, and Tory was an ex-All Black, and boy, was he a powerful man. My very first job when I started there, I was putting the strings around the necks and the forelegs of the carcasses after they had been processed. Still remember that, and then I was on the old floor. Typical labour, did everything.
Sure,
Nothing stood out, it just did everything.
Sure. How long did it take you to learn to sharpen a knife?
Very quick.
Yes, I know they say that's one of the things that you can't work for very long, even cutting strings or anything. If you haven't got a sharp knife.
Well, the butchers always used to tell me a sharp knife is half the job.
That's right.
And I'll give a little incident there. I was working on the chain there, and Tory Reed was pelting beside me, and he's a great man for jokes. And I was putting the knife into the hindquarters of the carcass, and all of a sudden I've hit something hard. And he was standing back laughing his head off because he shoved a gamble down there. So I always had two knives.
Yes, I can imagine.
So that's how I learnt the...
Yes, yeah. Sure.
What else can I say?
So you progressed from a labourer at some stage.
I started right at the very bottom, as everybody, most people did. Then I just, when the chains got laid off, well, those days was the last one on, first one off sort of thing. So luckily I got left on, kept on, and I never got laid off the whole time I was there.
Sure.
I was very lucky.
Sure.
Because a lot of the guys just go to a funeral, disappear for 3 days. And if go to a rugby match, I always made sure I never went to those. And
yep, sure.
So my foreman, Derek Rickson, looked after me sort of thing.
Sure.
During the off-season, I used to go down into the boning room or in the lamb cuts and help process the on the line down there, just packing meat and all that sort of thing. And then when the chains got put back on again, I'd come back up onto the offal floor. It's all on the same floor, but yes. I came up from the bottom.
It was always, whenever we, I said to you earlier about us bringing stock in there by on foot to be killed, there was a big lake at the bottom of the, and we often wondered what that lake was for. Do you know what it was?
No, but I know somebody who did know what it was for, and that was feeding his trout. My father had trout in there, and he was feeding it every day.
Is that right?
Yep, Dad had, I think it's about six of them he had in there.
Did he really?
Yep. So here you go down with the old stick, go up the top floor, get a piece of meat, come down, feed his trout. Yeah. Oh. But I think that was for washing down the yards.
Yes,
not 100%
it might have
sure.
been just a accumulation.
Just a storage.
Yes,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that. But
so you, when you talk about working on the top floor,
yes,
the stock went up.
All the stock went up.
And then it came down as it was killed.
Yes. No, it was all processed on the top.
And then it came down.
Went right along the chain, onto the cooling floor, and then it go into the chillers.
Yeah.
And then it go down into the freezers.
Sure, sure.
And there's an old freezer there. It was 18 something. It's still got the wooden walls and filled up with sawdust.
Is that one of the ones that was burnt down?
No, I think it was one of the ones that survived.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, 1884 block or something like that. Yes. Something like that, I can't remember.
Yes, so it, the work was always contract work, and it was always piece work, was
always,
it?
Always contract work, yes. Yes. During the season, we had six chains going. Mm. We started off at 26-man chain, up to 28-man chain, 30-man chain, then up to 32. Mm. And the peak of the season, when we had six chains going, we started at 7. Normally we start at 7:30, but this time we started at 7. We were processing up to 20,000 lambs a day.
Hell,
and Whakatū were doing the same.
Yes.
So that's 40,000 lambs a day just on the two plants. Yeah. That was only for the peak of the season.
Yes, yes.
And we had to get boys in from Te Ariki College
sure.
to fill up the chains because we couldn't get enough workers.
Sure, sure.
And that's a lot of carcasses to go.
Yes, yes, that's dead right.
Yeah.
Was it hard work?
No, but it was very, very monotonous work.
Yes.
You're just doing the same thing 8 hours or 6 or 7 hours a day. And we didn't process in different jobs at all. Six and a half. We didn't change jobs. Most of the times we just, four or five of us just changed around in a certain area. Like I was working in the offal area. I was the ringer, and another guy was the ringer and opener upper. Another guy was doing the gutting, as we call it.
Yeah.
And then the next guy did the plucking, and the next guy didn't. And that was, and then we had meat inspectors and all that sort of thing around beside us.
The
technology, yeah.
They didn't like the change of technology. They liked things as it was, having control.
Yeah. Well, when we first started there, everybody, most of the people on the chain, there was only a 26-man, what we call a 26-man chain. There was 26 butchers, but we had quite a few labourers in between. And most of the guys, like I'll give you an example, on the pelters, they just wore leggings and
sure.
black singlets.
Yeah.
And the only thing that got washed in those things was the hands.
Mm.
Everything else went into the drying room. The leggings stood up. You put them back on again the next day. And the singlets, well, I don't think they ever got changed at all.
No.
Until the new regulations came in and we all had to get into whites and hygiene and all this sort of thing. And that caused a bit of... That's the reason why we got a lot more men on the chain, because of the regulations of the hygiene regulations. You know, you had to sterilise your knife after every time you steeled it. You had to sterilise your knife this and had to do that, and because it just got too much for.
Yep, sure.
So that's why our jobs got slowed, got smaller.
To any of us that haven't been involved in the meat industry, to process 20,000 head of lambs a day is a fairly big logistical movement, because when you think of the trucks to bring them in, the stockmen to drive them up those steep
ramps.
Had
the sheep, had the peak sheep to take them up.
And then all those carcasses had to be put on rails to where they ended up.
On the cooling floor.
And it's
it was full on.
Just sheer numbers.
Yes.
How many a minute did you process?
It's either 6.5 or 7. I can't remember exactly the number now.
Seven
a minute. Seven carcasses a minute used to go past you.
Yes.
Or 6.5 a minute.
Yes, and if you didn't do your job...
Well, you, the other man had to help
you.
But that's the reason why you had to have a sharp knife.
Yeah,
you,
sure.
You didn't have time.
Yeah, sure.
And
sure.
At lunch times there, we always had an hour for lunch, and it was quite good to have a break, so we used to go for a run or go and play volleyball or something like that.
You had a cafeteria there if you wanted to use it, didn't you?
Not in our department.
Oh, not.
No.
Okay.
No, we just had a smoker room.
Yep, sure.
And everybody just used to bring their own food.
And there used to be the big butcher's shop as well.
Oh, there's your big good old butcher shop down the bottom, that's for sure. You used to go and ask for a pound of mince and you walk out with five.
we used to go and buy our meat there.
Yeah.
You'd get, buy a three-legged sheep or a two-legged sheep. The other leg had been cut off for but we still had to pay the full price. We didn't get...
Oh, you got the rejects.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They either had arthritis or something like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah, and well, the rest of the sheep was perfectly good. Oh, but yes. It was quite funny taking home a three-legged or two-legged sheep.
Yes, there's a lot of little stories I could tell you about the meatworks there.
We've
got one particular guy there. I won't mention names.
No. Just carry on.
He was well known for borrowing meat. Well, not only meat, yes. He'd borrow anything. If it's lying around, it seemed to disappear. And the old bosses tried to catch him out, and to this day, well, he's dead now, but to this day, they never caught him.
Mm.
And they went round to his house, but he was that cunning, he never took it home.
Mm.
He borrowed a bag of bobby calf testicles, balls, and he went to the hotel for a few drinks after work, put it down beside him and had a drink, and couldn't find his bag of testicles. And he hunted alone. He got the person who pinched his.
You're joking.
You got him. Now you got him. And you, yep. So he even, borrowed quite a few livers and hearts and you name it, carcasses, pigs. He even used to go there at 2:30 in the morning and borrow a few things. Well, he was known for it, but they just couldn't catch him. I won't go there. We're all guilty of it. Everybody's somewhere along the line. I actually did it one day, and I'll admit it now. We were in the boner room, two of us grabbed this fillet of meat, put it down between our pants and that sort of thing, and here we were in the smoker room cutting it up. Next moment there's a tap on the shoulder, and a assistant foreman says, "Just as well I'm not Derek Rickson." To that day I never touched another carcass, thing.
Know.
I thought, how stupid.
There's a bit of bravado in taking something like that, but a lot of them took it as a right. Gar said it was every week.
Of course it was.
Mm.
You'd be surprised by how much disappeared out of the freezers, in the 2:30 in the morning.
So as everything, the downturn in the meat industry came, did you have any warnings that the works was under threat?
Well, in the last 5 or 6 years, we were always told that the works are closing down, which is after Whakatū. And we thought, no, it would never happen to us. We thought we were safe as, since they had closed, we'd be good as gold. And then one day we went to work and the gates were closed. I was on the news here. And that was it.
The gates were closed.
The gates were closed. And not even the managers knew. They went to go into the yards, into the works, and they couldn't get them past the gates because they were locked.
It was on the Friday night, we were having dinner, and it came on the news about the works closing, and that was the first you'd ever heard of it. Mm-hmm. That was before the gates were closed. Mm, definitely. So you had to not know what was happening.
Mm.
Yes, so all of a sudden, one day you had a job.
Had a job, been there for 25 years, and the next day you had nothing.
And, while it was very monotonous work, there was a reward.
It was very rewarding for me.
It was contract work.
Yeah, contract work. I was there all year round.
The better you worked, the more you got paid.
Yep.
And so, yes, that would have been quite a shock.
It was quite a shock. But we had some good times there, Frank, before that.
Sure.
I remember at Christmas time there when six chains are going. Henry Keefe used to bring up his guitar. Henry O'Keefe, as they call him,
Henari.
And you get the guitar going. All the people in the office used to come over and listen.
While you were there was a big fire.
Yep.
Did that affect you guys at all?
No, we were very lucky. It was in the off season. And I was home at the time having lunch and I'm ready to go back to work. And my neighbour across the road says, "Why are you going back? The place is on fire." Looked up and saw the smoke, and we were lucky, the guys on the chain, because the new building had just been completed.
Mm.
So we had our 4 weeks holiday, and then came back to work.
Mm. Yes, because obviously it was a pretty big fire.
Oh yes, it started down in the freezers, went up the chute there, what they call the chute, where all the carcasses used to go down. And with the air draft, just went up and around the top floor and just went along. And but we did have a lot of fun at the meatworks, like I said, at Christmas time there. And lunchtime, so we did a lot of sporting activity.
Mm.
I remember one time there was the beef house and the mutton chain just had an open wall between us. And sometimes it's when the beef get knocked out, they shake their head and get up and run away. Well, I remember one particular time there, a guy named Peter Wairarama was racing around because the beast got up and ran into the monks all the chains, and the mutton.
Sure.
So you imagine the scattering of dragons with knives and... And old Peter was chasing this beast with what they call the hammer gun. It's like a big hammer with the rod that goes into the brain.
That's right.
And here he was chasing around this beast. Another incident there when we used to process goats. Jesus, they stink. And this billy goat, after he was processed, meant to be, got up, shook his head and took off down the chain. And from one end of the building to the other, he just ran right down past all the carcasses and all the workers. And right down the end, because we were down the very end, we had open windows. Glass windows. And what did he do? From the four floors up, jumped out, landed down the bottom, and the last they saw him was racing off over in the showgrounds. I never saw him again.
No.
Oh, there's another time, another incident there. I remember because I was situated on the very first chain, right beside Laurie Clothier's office, which is the foreman, or Gary Grigson.
Yep, we all know.
And everybody used to line up trying to get a job. Now, Gunner was Derek Rickson's name. Well, Gunner was, that was his name because he used to gun everybody down the road. Plus, he was a gunner in the war. He went up to this merry boy there and he says, "So, can you steal a knife?" And the merry boy said, "Yeah, how many do you want?" So, consequently, he never got a job. What else? Oh, we used to do bobby calves, mutton, goats. Oh, and the peak of the cattle season, they did 500 beef a day. So that's a big job on its own.
Did you all go back on the Monday to a meeting to find out?
Oh, after the works closed down.
Yes,
we had a big meeting outside the yards.
Yes.
We were, they tried to just tell us, explain everything, and of course you can imagine the feeling of some of the meat workers there. I've been there 25 years and some of them have been there a lot longer than
I
me.
Know.
A lot longer.
Yeah.
And of course it was very devastating. And when we had to go and get our gear, we were escorted in, so nothing could get pilfered, because Whakatū, apparently the gates were open and they just took whatever they could whenever they could, but we were escorted in and escorted out. That was the only time that I went back onto the floor after the place had closed down.
Sure.
And
there were no other opportunities in the meat industry?
No, because there was over at Pacific.
Yes.
But
yes.
We were all too shell-shocked to move.
Yes.
Some people did move pretty quick.
Sure.
The Langleys got in over there, but a lot of us were really shell-shocked, and Carol was quite concerned about me because I was at home sitting there. Why did it happen to us? Been there the X amount of years, dedicated my life to the place. It certainly got me.
Carol and I. About all those people I met at Flaxmere, just these men sitting on
just
their own.
Because
wives were out picking tomatoes or doing other menial tasks to try and keep the place alive.
Yep.
And that happened to that, 2,300 workers?
Oh, over 2.5 in the peak of the season.
That's right.
Yes.
You know, all of a sudden, when you unload that amount of psychological pressure on the community, no wonder there's a reaction. And what are they, and most of them, a lot of them will react to the family.
Yes.
You know, they can't strike out anyone else.
It's certainly a shock to the system.
Yeah, so after Tamona, what did you do then?
Well, I was shell-shocked, and then I went and worked in an orchard for $8 an hour, I think it was, after earning $25 an hour in the meatworks, and then down to $8 an hour. So I was just a forklift driver in this orchard. And one of the foremen, ex-foremen, told me he was going to start up in meatworks over in Napier, which is Hill Country Beef. So I said to the guy, the foreman, his Ken Kirkpatrick was his name, he said, "Yep, you can come in." I said, "Oh, well, I've got to give up a full-time job. Is it a permanent job?" And he said, "Yep." So I thought, righto. So I gave up my orchard work, went out there, and the reason why I got in, unknown to me, was because they started a night shift and some of the boys went up into the night shift and I took his place. When they put the night shift off after 3 months, he put me down the road. So I haven't spoken to that particular foreman since. I don't think I ever will. Because here I was unemployed again.
Yep, sure.
I thought, what the hang am I going to do now?
So
then, because I had family and a mortgage and everything else, like all the other boys, a lot of the others did, then I went and worked for Johnny Appleseed. I worked there for four and a half years. And then I had grandchildren coming into the world, and I didn't want to work 70 hours a week, which was what I was doing there, and went out to the vineyard. And after the vineyard, about 10, 11 years, I retired.
And so here we are today.
So,
that's rather fascinating, just to go back and look at the mosaic of a family, how it's influenced by outside pressures. Doesn't matter how well you do your job.
No, that's for sure.
Doesn't mean anything.
You're just a number.
So, thank you, Keith.
That's all right. You're welcome.
That's really great.
Oh, I hope it is.
You know, it's really good. I'll just push pause. Where are we?